Welcome to the eGovernance Academy podcast to discover the future of governance. eGovernance Academy has assisted digital transformation globally in more than 130 countries. Our experts will share their insights and worldwide examples on how digital technology could benefit every society. Tune in for the Digital Government Podcast every Wednesday.
Welcome to the Digital Government Podcast. I'm Federico Plantera, journalist, sociologist, and researcher, and today with us we have Martin Kaivats. Welcome, Martin.
Hello, nice to see you again.
Yes, National Digital Advisor of the Government of Estonia. And today with you, we will talk about probably the project that has been one of your main projects in the past years, which is finding a way to involve and deploy artificial intelligence in the delivery of public services. Am I right?
Yes, I was the initiator of the Estonian artificial intelligence policy, strategy and law. And this was already, I would say, like 3-4 years ago when this discussion started. In order to start debating on artificial intelligence in the society, the Estonian case was that we utilized the concept of self-driving cars, because a self-driving car is a concept like if a person who necessarily doesn't understand anything about AI understands that, look, look, there is no wheel on this car and can understand this concept, then I believe that much more complexity can be introduced because the people's mind is more flexible. And it's like Frank Zappa said, that that people's minds are like parachutes. They only work when they're open. So we utilize the concept of self-driving cars to explain the complexities of artificial intelligence in the society. And that kind of kicked off the AI revolution in the Estonian public sector.
But we're already addressing actually a rather interesting topic about the way that artificial intelligence in general is addressed in the public discourse, which is that to many it seems like this, I don't know, mystery box, black box that is understandable, let's say, only to technical people or like engineers. But we can instead also make it a more understandable topic for the general public, because what started in Estonia back then was also like a public discussion, right, on AI.
Yeah, the biggest, I think the problem of the black box is not necessarily the first thing. The first thing I would say is still that if a person who doesn't know anything about AI, then the first thing that comes to mind is the Terminator image where Arnold Schwarzenegger, half of his face blown off and this little red eye coming out. And probably that's like a bad vision of AI, which means that it's human shaped. AI looks like a human, which it doesn't. And also because it's evil. It wants to kill people. And that's one of the biggest kind of strategical communication misconceptions that we from the government side actually wanted to avoid. We wanted to make artificial, to be specific, narrow artificial intelligence more relatable, more understandable. And that's the reason why we actually introduced a new word, or actually in Estonian context is an old word. We started using krat as the metaphor for AI. And for those listeners who doesn't know what a krat is, then and you probably don't, because this is a very small Estonian thing. Krat in Estonian mythology is a character that everybody themselves can make out of random household objects, put them together, and of course, according to the myth, go to the conjunction of five roads, acquire a soul from the devil. The soul, in the case of narrow AI, is basically the algorithm that makes the decisions. And then this krat kind of becomes your slave and does everything you tell it to. But this has been very, very important in order to make the complexity of artificial intelligence more relatable and understandable for every average people who not necessarily are not into ICT. Because, for example, I have 3 children in my family. None of them know what an AI is in specific, but they kind of understand what the krat is, because this is in all of the children's books and in there's films about it and so on. So I think this has helped a lot. And so in Estonia, all of the AI policies is basically krat policy and krat law. But this kind of conceptualizes the complexity into one thing that is understandable for people who don't necessarily understand the concepts of black box and something like that.
Okay, let's take for a second the literature route, because this is an interesting topic that might also have some connections with what you were saying before, like about Terminator, let's say, and the public image of artificial intelligence and the scary things, in a sense. Krat, first of all, to all our listeners, I mean, now you know exactly the perfect recipe to create a krat, because you described it like in detail. But at the same time, do you think that there is, I mean, the krat in the literature, in Estonian literature, in Estonian mythology, can become evil?
Yeah.
And one thing on this is also that it's interesting to see that in the public discourse or in the public image, let's say, your reputation of AI in the beginning as popularized by movies or like or books, let's say, it's a rather, in the beginning, it was a rather potentially evil one. So is digital or AI scary in this sense, or can it be scary somehow? Also connecting that to the krat topic, let's say.
Yeah, definitely, because the controversy in the topic of AI is still there. If we look at the potential existential risk, the different threats of superintelligence, they are still there. And this is actually another big misconception now, is that when we talk about AI, then in the current phase, which means like next 5 to 10 years, the likelihood of this type of a superintelligence emerging is relatively small. But still, the controversy is there. And for those who don't know the myth of Krat, then the myth also includes several of those details. Then, when this mythological creature becomes your slave, then your job as the host or the master of the Krat is to give it different jobs or assignments. But when your own brain lacks functioning and doesn't give the right assignments to the Krat, then the Krat comes and kills you. So there is this controversy. But also in the funny part of the story, there is always a workaround in the myth. So you can always give those Krats some very strange, stupid assignments that are like undoable, basically, and then you can hack the Krat in a kind of way. But I think this kind of use of different words, and this is purely unique to Estonian context, this cannot be utilized in any other cultures because any other mythologies lack such a character, then it has helped a lot to make the complex subject more understandable. I would also call closer to humans, but also understanding that artificial intelligence does not think like a human. This is one of the biggest misconceptions. People think like God made human by its own hand, face and way of thinking. No, it's completely different. And people think that an AI will be more like a human. No, it won't. It's completely different. The way artificial intelligence in the narrow case, it functions in a very, very straightforward way. But if we talk about general AI or the more complexities, then it's not human-shaped.
So you don't have to be Will Smith and iRobot, basically, to be able to control the AI somehow. It will not slip out of our hands at some point and then conquer us all. But then, the application of this, or the practical example of this, is the fact that in the Estonian government, we managed to deploy the artificial intelligence to serve the citizens better. So in the Estonian context, after introducing the topic of the Krat law and the artificial intelligence public debate, how is AI being used at the moment in the Estonian government or in the Estonian public sector at large to deliver better services to the citizens?
So currently, Estonia has deployed way over 60 different narrow AI applications within the public sector.
60.
So that's quite a lot. We are hoping to get more than 100 by the end of this year, 2021. And the amount of different narrow AI applications is growing rapidly. And it's helping a lot already. And these first use cases, in terms of the society, these are like rather small, nitty-gritty, helping to do a bit here and a bit there. But already they have proven to have a great value, both in terms of cost effectiveness, meaning making stuff cheap, but mainly I would also say the quality of services. Because and there is many different examples in the public sector. For instance, the unemployment office, like currently in the pandemic, it's an important kind of a thing.
Very important, yeah, yes.
There is a lot of people who need to find a new job.
Mm-hmm.
And actually, it's funny, like a top-notch specialist, if they lose a job, then... the likelihood, the average likelihood for a top-notch specialist to find a new job and stick with that more than half a year is about 42% on average in a society. But what an AI does for us is we, of course, ask the person for their consent because Estonia is a human-centric governance.
Mm-hmm.
And if the person allows to share a bit of data, previous work history, educational history, then the unemployment office can actually offer and suggest jobs that are more likely to suit them.
Mm-hmm.
And this is very critical because we have managed to push this percentage that previously was 42 for a top-notch specialist to up to, I think, 75%, the likelihood of finding a job and sticking to that for the next half a year. And if you put that into the bigger perspective of unemployment, I think that's a great benefit. That's just one of those examples of 60. There's other examples, like in a very Estonian case, European Union pays Estonian farmers to take care of the land,
mm-hmm.
basically mow the hay and do other stuff like that. And for those reasons, previously the inspector needed to go places and check whether the farmer did or did not do the job. And some of those places are really remote. Currently, we utilize satellite imagery. And out of that satellite imagery, with the help of an AI, we can actually see whether this job was done or not. And the inspector only goes to those places who are likely have missed their thing.
Mm-hmm.
But again, so basically this example of European subsidies for taking care of the land, like this already in the very first year, basically proved to... Like the benefit was 650,000 euros within the first year. And that's way, way over the cost that this little narrow AI application was spent to develop it.
Mm-hmm.
So, but it's also important that this is not necessarily to punish those farmers. It's rather to help them. So there is an automatic system like, hey, you were supposed to mow your hay last week. Can you do it by next week? And if the farmer misses the deadlines like several times, only then this subsidy is removed from them. It's not a punishing mechanism. It's just a friendly nudging to help to make people
to
do what they have said that they will do. And those are only the two examples. And there is like more than 60 of examples like that, from traffic, from different services. Various different chatbots, lots of different applications.
Let's stick for a second to the human example, let's say, of the unemployment insurance, just because and finding a new job, because probably taking that as indeed like a point of reference, then maybe we can address also another issue that is frequently raised when it comes to artificial intelligence, which is. Artificial intelligence, so in that sense, for example, in the case of the unemployment insurance, it takes a decision that is based on data analysis, but also path dependence somehow, right? It analyzes like past patterns, let's say, or like similar patterns, and then it recommends probably like a likely similar one, no? But similar, of course, like it's not that the similar solution might work for the average, let's say, of that social group, but not necessarily like targeted or like tailored to that person. So the thing is also about this and about the decisions and the suggestions that are made by the AI is based on what? What are the criterias that the algorithms, for example, utilize to suggest certain decisions or provide a certain service? And what are also the risks eventually connected to something not reasoning like a human?
Yeah. So I think the biggest problem here, and this is not necessarily only the unemployment, but it's a general issue. It's a question of bias. The algorithm will make decisions based on previous data that has been entered, but also the patterns and the dependencies that you mentioned. And this can be referred to as a certain bias. So the general algorithms might do fine for, let's say, 90% of the population that have a very standard routine, mm-hmm. but it might not necessarily work for special cases. And I think this is one of the things about what the AI promises, actually, is that what the government through artificial intelligence tools can do is pretty much automate all of the routine procedures. Well, in Estonia, we hope to do that within the next 10 years. If you can imagine a government without any routine procedures, that's a pretty good one. But what's more important here and into that conversation of path dependency is that I think we can also utilize AI to follow to find those special cases, because if a person in its own context is unique. Sorry, a very bad example. If you're a father of five, you are with a one wooden leg and you're mentally ill, then you are definitely not the standard. Mm-hmm. So there is too many criteria that fall out of the kind of the normal pattern.
The normal distribution,
yeah,
I'd say. No?
Exactly. But I think we can utilize even AI for those. To find those cases that need extra and human attention. So what we can do, we cannot ever automate all of the society. Mm-hmm. But what we can do is allocate the human resources, let's say social workers and the human time to those people and cases that actually need it. So we won't say that like AI is a tool for everybody. No, definitely not. But it's for most bigger part of the society. But we can also find those people who would actually need more attention, more human attention. And I think that's a place what we can do. And that's the problem of the path dependency. And as our like community and know-how of utilizing AI within the public sector grows, I think finding out those special cases is very, very important, because the current public sector is still based on this modernistic idea of, oh, well, basically industrialization, that there's a standard piece coming and then you go to kindergarten, then you go to school and mm-hmm. everything is like the same. Mm-hmm. But in reality, it's not. Yep. Like there are so many special cases. So I think jumping out of this line of this modernistic thought that everybody is the same is also the potential that what artificial intelligence can do. In the very early years, I would still guess that the problem of path dependency and historic patterns of recognizing those, I don't know, needs or for example, with unemployment case, the likelihood that you might stick with that job. But as this ecosystem grows, as the algorithms become smarter, I think we're able to also find those people that need more attention from humans, actually.
Also, because we're talking about likelihood, so it's not like the Gospel of Matthew, let's say, that says this is what will happen and then this is exactly like the path that you will take. We're still talking about likelihood, so there is also a percentage of unlikelihood, let's say, if something happened. But it's an important and an interesting specification, the one about the outliers, because indeed the AI might help recognize what are the outliers which are who have special needs, indeed, and special needs, even when we deploy AI, should not then become unmet needs, but should actually be needs where we devolve more attention to, basically, to complement with the human factor exactly the capabilities of the AI. Martin, I will ask you another thing now that is that basically draws some conclusions or like from the Estonian experience so far, because of course it's not like a work that bam, it's done and we're good with it. But since considering the specificity of the Estonian application, let's say, of AI, in the sense we did it with a certain thing in mind, which was, for example, the Krat reference, and then we already started implementing it in about, indeed, as you said, like 60 different public services. What could then we say, let's say, as this famous formula, let's say, of the lessons learned from the Estonian side so far to other governments, for example, or like other people abroad who are have the intention to implement some artificial intelligence in their public service delivery? What are the three things, let's say, to look at?
It's... Currently I feel that the hype cycle of AI is already like a bit down.
It's going down, fortunately. I mean, fortunately. For years
so,
it was.
So I think one of the main lessons learned is like, this is not about technology. Yes, technology can help. It's one of those tools you can help, but it's still fundamentally about building the mindset and culture. And so I think... the easiest way to start is start small. Start with small pilots, proof of concepts, small problems that are manageable, and build a community around those places. Because especially in the public sector, the main problem is that who is the owner of the one particular service? Who is the person who actually takes this? I want to do this. I will make it happen. But those people, in terms of artificial intelligence, and it's not to blame, is also that we need to raise the competence and the know-how about AI. So it's not like it will not work if a politician says that, I don't know, we will automate parliamentary democracy. Mm. Like, yeah, you could do that, but thou shalt not start with that. So, but we can start with small things. Get the lessons learned from those small things, share those lessons with the public sector and with the society, learn together and build a community around that. And then step by step, as the amount of know-how and the community grows, then you can take on even more complex subjects, mm-hmm. or tasks or problems. And I think this is the way to go. And also it's a different thing, because artificial intelligence projects are not, they are small projects that you can do like with not necessarily big money. It's a small thing. You can utilize image recognition. There is lots of open source trained models already out there. The know-how is there. But also another thing that is, I think, very, very critical to public sector is that open source projects are not necessarily linear projects. And this is a tough one for the public sector, because in regular ICT procurement and digital projects, it's like, okay, this is the problem and this is the point we want to reach. Mm-hmm. With AI, it's like, you don't know if it's possible, actually. Mm-hmm. So you need to be more open and flexible to basically in legal terms, it's like the procurement text needs to be open enough to allow other options as well. Because the projects, you need to test and pilot and test and pilot. You don't necessarily know that you will end up with this solution. The likelihood of getting a good solution is fairly good. But you still need to be like more open-minded. And this is something, this is why I would say is one of the most difficult things, because bureaucracies and governments are used to procuring and working on projects that are fairly straightforward and linear. So working like, okay, like it is one A to B to C to D, and it's a very logical, modernistic way of thinking.
Mm-hmm.
So, and that said, I would say, like, again, from the lesson learned from Estonia, is that if we look back from the digital transformation journey of Estonia, the previous kind of two decades or something like that, in a very simplified way, it has been about changing the way of thinking from paper to digital, and that design process in between. That's a pretty tough sell, actually, like in all of the details and nuances of the society. Then I would argue that the next 10 or 20 or 30 years, and that's even more difficult.
Yeah, from 10 to 30 is a big range.
Yeah, is how to change the public sector thinking from the current status quo of being linear to something that is non-linear. Mm. So the line is not A, B, C, D. It can be A, B, X, Z, and you don't know which one it is. It's about the likelihood of it. And that is something more difficult to understand because our educational system still have been, we've been all educated in an era where the continuity is still A, B, C, D. Yeah. One thing leads to another. Mm-hmm. But with AI, it's like maybe the solution that you're looking for is there.
Yeah.
And you don't know it. And maybe the question you're asking is totally wrong in any particular situation.
Yeah, so it should be like a rather more like research-based approach. Like the research, the procurements basically become research questions somehow.
Yeah, exactly.
That
exactly.
are open to the exploring other possibilities than the one that you thought of in the beginning.
Exactly. And but in order to do that, Estonia has utilized our chief data officer, Ott Velsberg, very, very well has set up this kind of deep dives. Which is basically, like, again, in many places for public sector communicating with any private sector companies sometimes is kind of seems dodgy or something. And then the bureaucrats basically are very like, oh, we talk to only ourselves. But those guys in the boring corridors not necessarily can create innovation.
Mm-hmm.
So in Estonia, we have utilized deep dives, which is basically a group of volunteer experts that go and help the public sector to help to frame those questions in the very early case. Like like a civil servant cannot necessarily like fix or know the answers, but there is a lot of people coming to help in a very open environment, and this I think can help many, many countries.
Perfect. Thanks a lot, Martin. And thanks also to all our listeners, and tune in to the next episode of the Digital Government Podcast.
This podcast is brought to you by eGovernance Academy. Tune in on next Wednesday.